Hello, iterative marketers. Welcome to the Iterative Marketing Podcast, where each week we give marketers and entrepreneurs actionable ideas, techniques, and examples to improve your marketing results. If you want notes and links to the resources discussed on the show, sign up to get them emailed to you each week at iterativemarketing.net. There you'll also find the Iterative Marketing blog and our community LinkedIn group where you can share ideas and ask questions of your fellow iterative marketers. Now let's dive into the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Iterative Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Robinson, and with me, as always, is our co-host, Elizabeth Aaron. How are you doing today, Elizabeth?
I'm good, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing great. We're getting ready to host guests for the first time in our new home, so that is exciting, and as we try to figure out exactly what we're going to shove under beds and into closets because it's not really unpacked yet, and see what we can make happen for this weekend.
Does your wife have a honey-do list for you?
I am more the keeper of the honey-do list than she is. I think I'm a little bit more aggressive about what I want to get done around the house, and I never seem to get it all done. These houses are a lot of work.
They are. They are, for sure.
I kind of want to go back to renting. So today we're talking about customer journey mapping, and I think it would probably be best if we started out with a definition. So do you want to kind of throw out what customer journey mapping means to you and what you think of when you hear that?
Yeah, definitely. Before I do that, I think I want to hit on the fact that this is probably one of my favorite of the components, because this is the chance where you get to take all of that pre-work that you've done and you put it all together, and this is where it starts becoming tangible for you. And so I get really excited when we get to journey map. And if I could just journey map, I think I would be a pretty happy camper. So what exactly is a journey map? It is a documentation of the customer as they move through your sales cycle. And you're talking about what the person is thinking and feeling before they ever get to know about your brand or about your service, all the way through to after they've made that first purchase and beyond. And it helps to put into context what it is that they're thinking about and what's motivating them and what may be holding them back, that you can then use and your organization can then use to target collateral at them, audit your customer experience. And there's a lot of other actual really great benefits that we're going to get into a little bit later in the show.
We talked about the path of the customer as they become a customer, but the journey map actually extends after they've become a customer, right? It can include as they as you grow into them as a customer, and then also after they ideally start to spread the word of your business to others and become an evangelist for your own brand, right?
Yeah, and I think that's a great point because, you know, just like I did, so often we get caught up in how do we get them to be our customer in the first place? And then once we've made that sale, we kind of stop. But you don't want to do that. It costs more to acquire a new customer. We want to keep that going. We know that people will buy from based on friends' referrals. And so there's a lot of value in making sure that you continue to monitor and try to influence that that journey as they move forward.
The other thing I think it's important for our listeners to know is there's a lot of different models for how you lay out that path from, they don't know us, we don't know them, through their customer or a client. The most common is the traditional funnel of like AIDA, awareness, interest, desire, action. And we actually took a model from a gentleman by the name of Avinash Kaushik, who's this just brilliant guy who works for Google. And his model is see, think, do. We use that as kind of the backbone of our journey maps, right?
And we've actually expanded that to go past, again, not just looking at the sales cycle, but the entire customer journey, and expanded that to grow and give as well.
Yeah. I think Avinash threw care at the end of it, but we found that there's really two stages after that customer becomes a customer, where at first they're still growing into your business, and then at some point they become, like we talked about, that referral source, that evangelist, the guy that you add to the reference list, right?
And I think it's interesting, when we plot our customer journey out, it typically is this linear document, because that's just how it gets set up and it flows. But it's, I think, very important to note that that's not what happens. I kind of envision more of a, kind of like a game of Candyland is how I would look at it, where, you know, you're on a path and then you hit a chute or a ladder and all of a sudden you're back in. And so maybe you're a customer and you've made it to the give or the grow stage, but now you are in the need for a new car. And so now you're going back into that see, think, do. And so it's not something that once you've hit a stage, you're only moving forward or you're only in that stage. You're constantly moving back and forth based on what your needs are and where you are in the customer cycle.
And depending on what you're selling, after that person becomes a customer, you sell them their product or service, you get to the end of that sales cycle and they're probably high on your product or service for a little while and a referral source, or maybe they're not. At some point they reset back to that C audience where they're an unknown again and your brand's not top of mind. And so you can add, there's a cyclical component to it too.
Yeah, great point.
So I think it's probably important that we now that we've talked about what it is, and we'll get more in depth on how you create one a little bit later in the podcast. But let's talk for a little while about why these are a useful tool. Why do we bother creating a customer journey map? In my mind, the first thing, the most important thing is that a persona is a phenomenal tool, but it really falls short in painting a full picture as to what's going on with that individual at any given point in time.
I think that's a great point. You know, you've referred to it this way, and I think it's a great way to capture it, but your persona is really a photograph. It's that one specific point in time where your customer journey becomes the video. That becomes, you know, different factors are going to come in and influence what's happening in that journey, and that journey and the persona definitely plays a part in that. You're going to find the pain points. You're going to find the motivations. You're going to find the things that are maybe distracting them from making your message the primary thing that they're focusing on. But what the customer journey does is it helps you kind of puts you in their shoes as they walk through that experience. And you can see how that journey is unfolding, that story is unfolding for them as they move through the process.
Yeah, I love that word story. And I think that that's really, you know, you said that you love this phase, this actionable component. I do too, and it really comes down to storytelling. You're painting that picture. You're taking that stick figure and animating them as they move through that process, and adding all of the context and the thoughts and emotions that move along with it.
And I think that's really what the point of the customer journey map is that we are trying to find a way to communicate to our organization the context of the persona as it changes over time, how it applies in each of the different situations before they know about us, after they know about us, when they're considering our product. And it allows us to, you know, if documented and discovered correctly, it allows us to really, again, get inside of their heads and to help to take what we've developed in the persona and turn it into something that's actionable for us.
And it's not just actionable for us as marketers, it's also actionable for other parts of the company, right?
Oh, definitely.
I know that when we've created customer journey maps in the past, you know, obviously the sales team needs to be involved because they're a huge part of that journey, but then also customer service, even, you know, product development can get involved in understanding, you know, how does this product fit within the customer life cycle, and what can we do to help extend that customer life cycle or push people into possibly being more of an evangelist, or giving the evangelist the opportunity, I guess you could say, to better better share the messages of the brand.
And I think it applies on the operations side as well. Having worked in for companies that have very strong customer service and loyalty programs, this is, I think, there's a really great application here, because you've got a chance to take a program that is meant to not only help with acquisition, but then also retention of the customer over the life cycle. And you're able to talk about these different benefits. And so, you know, when you're considering, hey, what else should we add to make this a more attractive program to them? You can really see where that fits in the customer journey, at what point it would be best to introduce it. You know, what are some of the different systems changes that are going to happen? And again, how is that going to influence their journey?
I think another huge benefit to having a documented customer journey is now, just like a persona and your persona name, set up a shared vocabulary for discussing who we're targeting. Your journey map and having defined stages within there sets up a shared vocabulary for talking about when we're targeting them, or when this experience is supposed to happen, or when this piece of content is best absorbed by the audience.
That's a great point. And I think another benefit of that is it helps to set a more realistic expectation. Just because a customer has reached out to us and asked a question of our sales team doesn't mean that they are now ready to make that purchase. And it helps to really explain that, yes, you may be talking to them, but they're in the think stage right now. They still need to be in, you know, they need some additional information. And so how can we provide them that information in a way that supports their process, but kind of pushes them towards the direction that we want to go, or maybe guide is a better word.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that it's important to note that it's really more of a guiding or creating the best experience for that individual at that stage. It's really hard to push somebody from one stage to the next. If I am not ready to sign at the bottom line, the harder you push, the harder I push away. But if I have the best experience I possibly can for the stage that I'm at, if I'm just thinking about a product and I'm not ready to make that commitment yet, and you're there with every answer I could possibly want, and they're providing additional information that helps me, while helping me understand why I would choose you over somebody else, but not telling me to choose you, then you're creating a far better experience. And it's that experience that's going to end up making the consumer choose to move to the next level, to the next stage, instead of the brand pushing them there.
That makes a lot of sense.
I think now is probably a good time for us to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more specifically about what makes a good journey map versus one that's kind of not so good, I guess, and then how we really should be applying these things. So why don't we take a break and let's figure out how we can help some people.
Before we continue, I'd like to take a quick moment to ask you iterative marketers a small but meaningful favor. We don't have sponsors for this podcast. Instead of asking you to get a free digital scale or enter some code for 10% off your website, we ask that you give a few dollars to a charity that's important to one of our own. This week's charitable cause was sent in by Betty Lackwe of Hatco in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Betty asks that you make a contribution to the University of Minnesota's Eric Johnson Music Scholarship Fund, a fund started in Eric's memory for full-time music students in need of financial support. Learn more at give.umn.edu/give/Eric Johnson or visit the link in the show notes. If you would like to submit your cause for consideration for our next podcast, please visit iterativemarketing.net/podcast and click the Share a Cause button. We want to support what's important to you.
Well, welcome back. So before the break, we talked about what a journey map is and why everybody should put the effort into creating a customer journey map. Now I think it's important that we talk about, you know, what's actually on this document and what makes it valuable.
I think before we get into that, if you have never seen a customer journey map, totally recommend that you check out iterativemarketing.net. We've got some blogs about customer journey and some examples of customer journey maps that I think will help to put this into a little better context if you're not exactly sure what it is that we're talking about.
And we'll link to that in the show notes so that you have access to quickly link off to that. And I think we've also got some templates out there too, so that'll be a valuable resource for everyone. The first component that I think is most important to get on the journey map is getting inside of that persona's head at each individual stage and understanding what are they thinking or expressing, and then also what are they feeling that they might not express. So, you know, what are the external cues that you can see going on with this prospect at this particular moment? If I'm at the C stage, it might be that I don't really care about your particular product or service because I'm not in the market for it. But as I move into think, here's where some of the concerns around features and benefits might arise and which features and benefits are important. But underneath that, there's generally more of a psychological feeling or fear or motivation that is driving them as they make that selection process. And getting that documented down and into the customer journey is it can be challenging, but it's extremely valuable because now you know what emotional appeal you need to make, either as a salesperson or as a marketer, as you're creating collateral.
That's a great point. And I think it also helps you kind of read between the lines. And we actually just helped one of our clients put together with their creative agency a visual map of the customer journey. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of fun. And we found a really unique way to incorporate some of those internal fears that may be holding them back or maybe influencing their decision. We found a way to incorporate that into the visual map. And I'm excited to get the feedback from their sales team and see if this is something that is useful. But it's almost like the secret power to kind of read between the lines. And so they may be saying one thing, but here's what's really going on behind the scenes and how you as a marketer or your sales team can help to alleviate some of those fears that they may be having, but not necessarily expressing.
It can be really hard to get to the bottom of some of those fears, but it can be so powerful, particularly for sales, to understand exactly what, you know, what's going on in there. Because we don't express that stuff rationally.
No, we don't. We, no matter if you're a consumer making a purchasing decision or you are a person making a purchasing decision for a business, mm-hmm. you're still influenced by your emotion. And that changes Absolutely. Over the course of that sales cycle. And I think that's one of the other reasons that the customer journey is so useful in that, you know, what may have originally attracted the customer or the client to your brand or to your product or service, that can change over time. And so one of the other things that the customer journey does is it really helps to identify which of your brand attributes are most important at that specific stage in the journey. Because that could change. It may not. It may be that they're looking for the stability of the brand and that's the number one reason they chose you and that they will never step away from that need. But what we found in our own exploration is that typically that those needs evolve. And so what is important at the see stage or the think stage may be something that is still important to them, but there may be an additional factor that's influencing them when they get into think and do.
All of our brands are multifaceted, right? There's never just one single face to our brand. If they were, they'd be kind of boring. It's these other layers, these other different components that really make up that full brand, but different parts of that are better exposed at different times. It's just like if you're dating, it's not like you're going to want to show all of your true colors all at once. Some of that stuff that becomes endearing at later stages of a relationship really push people away at the beginning stages. So it's a matter of letting those bits and pieces of that personality shine at the right time. And if you can document that, then the entire organization can get behind exactly, you know, when is it that we show this softer side or this more innovative or crazy side to our brand? At what point is that welcomed in the journey?
That's a great point, and I loved your example with dating. It's a great way to tie it to real life that we all have experience with, so that's fun. Now, one of the other things that makes the customer journey useful is, you know, I think it's setting realistic expectations, and you talked about this before, and I know this is kind of one of your pet peeves when it comes to customer journey mapping, but, you know, do you want to talk about how much influence we actually have over the persona as they move through the journey?
Yeah, because one of the key components of a journey map is understanding what is going to change in that persona's mind that's going to move them from, you know, one particular stage to the next stage. So if you break think down into a couple of different stages, one of them being researching and the next one being maybe a comparison stage, what makes that persona stop researching and move into that comparison mode? What makes them move from that comparison mode into maybe more of a do stage where they're ready to buy? And we as marketers think that, and even as salespeople think that it's our job to corral and push these personas and push them from stage A to stage B to stage C. And we're not doing our job if we're not pushing, right? But the reality is that it's nearly impossible to make that push occur. When you start to document why somebody moves from one stage to the next, chances are it is some action that they took as the prospect, or it is some external factor that you have no control over as a marketer. And your influence over those things is almost nil. Like I said before, the best thing you can do is to create a phenomenal experience for them when they're in that stage, so that when they're ready to move forward, when whatever criteria changes that makes them move from researching to comparison or from comparison to getting a quote to make sure that there's no reason in their mind that they wouldn't move forward with you. Because chances are you're not the only brand in consideration, whether it's B2C or B2B. If you create that phenomenal experience, you're going to be at the top of the list when they move to the next stage.
That's a great point. And I think, you know, part of creating that phenomenal experience is with your messaging. And that's one of the other areas in the customer journey map that you have the opportunity to identify what the key message is. Because again, that message is going to be different when someone is first coming into contact with your brand versus someone who's ready to make that sales decision. And those needs are going to change, and the tone that you talk to them and the information that you give them and what you actually ask them to do. Like you said earlier, if you push them too hard in the C stage, you're going to lose them. You're going to turn them off to your brand and they're not going to come back. And so one of the components of the customer journey is key messaging at that specific point in time. And the way you put that together is going to help influence whether or not you've given them the information they need. You've met their needs. That is right. Going to let them get to that next stage.
Right. And this is, you know, if you think about it, the brand attributes that you let shine at each stage is really your personality. That's the emotional end of it. This is more the logical end of it. This is making sure that they are receiving the messages that reassure them, that inform them as they move through the different stages, so that they're getting the right message at the right time to help them feel comfortable, to help them be armed with the information that they need in order to talk to other stakeholders. Every journey is different. What they need to hear from you is going to be different. And likewise, the content that they need to get is going to be different. So that's the next kind of phase. And we kind of, you know, when we work on this with clients, we have sort of two sections of the journey map. We call it kind of above the line and below the line. The above the line stuff is the really where the discovery is. That's understanding what's going on in the persona's mind. What parts of the brand do they want to experience? What key messages do they want to get? What are they admitting to verbally, externally? What are they kind of keeping secret? The second part is, what are we going to give them? What do we need to create? How are we going to align this with our channels and with our media? And so that becomes the next step, and to some extent when the hard work begins, right?
Exactly. And I think, you know, one thing that we always say when we're sitting down with clients, we ask them is what content or tools would they pay for? And we don't physically mean an exchange of money. Instead, what we're talking about is an exchange of information. To get them into your pipeline and to get them into your CRM database, you need some information. You need to know who they are. You need to know how to contact them. And to get that information, they have to give it to us, and they have to give it to us freely. And so what can we do to encourage them to share that information with us? And that's what we're talking about when we say, what content would they pay for? What is going to be so valuable to them that they are willing to give up the very precious information of their cell phone number or of their email address? Because I know there's plenty of times I'm like, that looks like interesting content. And then there's a data collection form. And then I'm like, well, no, I don't know if I want it that bad. Mm-hmm. I could probably find it somewhere else. And other times I gladly enter my email address because I'm that interested in what it is that they have to say.
And even if you don't have that content collection form, there's still some friction associated with getting this information, especially, you know, today where we're using our mobile devices so often. You hit, you know, even a white paper that's given away free without contact information, that's challenging for you to access on your mobile phone. If we want you to watch a video, well, it better be a lot of valuable content for you to take time away from your Facebook stream to watch that video. Whatever the content is, there's a trade-off. We all have so much information and so much entertainment and so much life available to us that we have to make a sacrifice in order to be able to experience anything that a brand is going to be feeding us. And so if you focus on, you know, if there were an exchange of money, what would we be willing to pay for? I think that you set yourself up for success in producing content that will overcome the distractions of life, different things competing for attention, and maybe even get people to give up some contact information here or there.
One of the final points that we're going to get into in a lot more depth next week, actually, is talking about how your content and your media aligns.
Yeah, it's probably too big of a topic for this podcast, so I'm glad it's a separate component in the six actionable components in a separate podcast. But you do have to take and align everything that you've produced in the past and everything that you're producing in the future, and make sure that not only is it targeted at a persona, but it's targeted at a particular one or more stages of the journey of that persona, so that it hits them in the right context. Because otherwise, if you send the wrong message at the wrong time, you're going to be exposing those wrong bits of your personality, of your brand. You're going to be sending the wrong messages. I think now is probably a good time for us to dive into how we go about creating an effective persona. What's some tips maybe that our listeners can take as they set off on creating personas of their own? Do you have a good idea for one of your first tips here?
Yeah. Getting the right people in the room is, I think, probably one of the most important things, because if you don't have the right people in the room, you're going to have a really hard time discovering what this journey is. And so, again, these are people that have contact with the customers or the clients that you're trying to target. You know, it's great that your marketing team is there, but you want some firsthand knowledge. So whether that's your customer service department, your sales team, if you've got reps that are out in the field, those are all great people and great resources to really rely on when you start to put this journey together. Because again, we're trying to get inside the heads. We need to understand what kind of questions and what concerns they have and the type of information they're looking for. And you've got some really great resources if you ask the right people.
Absolutely. And I love these collaboration sessions too, because you get sales in the room with marketing, and those two never, I shouldn't say never. In most organizations, the back and forth between sales and marketing can be a little rough sometimes. So to get them in the room collaborating on the same document at the same time is great for getting everybody on the same page. And then these documents also further that. The same thing with customer service. Operations, getting those folks around a table to give you this additional information. What happens after the sale? You know, what happens after they become a customer and feed through the later stages? Again, it's some great bonding.
And I think that really leads into kind of the second tip for success, is that we are not fabricating this journey. We are not writing this journey. We are uncovering it. We are discovering it. It's not something that we're making up. And that's where getting those right people in the room really helps, because we want to make sure that what we're putting on paper is what is actually happening out in the field and out with our customers. And so it really comes down to discovering that journey, not creating it.
I mean, this document can become the basis for other initiatives within the organization to go and change and enhance a customer experience. But for the sake of understanding, for the sake of this exercise and for marketing, it's first and foremost important to have a document that clearly reflects what reality is, because that's the context that we're going to be marketing to, right? That's the context the persona will be in at the time that they're receiving our messages, that they're engaging with our content. As we move along that journey, I think it's really important that we don't overcomplicate things. I know that particularly...
Wait. Are you saying marketing overcomplicates things occasionally?
Just occasionally, you know. You get a bunch of creatives in the room and bigger and more, you know, and more bigger, better, more complicated is kind of where our minds tend to go. But the reality is, in journey mapping, just like in personas, less is more. So if you can... start with a simpler journey map, fewer stages along the way. It's a whole lot easier to later go and split a stage out if you feel that you need to create a different experience at two different subsections of those stages. It's a lot easier to split something out later than it is to combine it later when you find out that we kind of overcomplicated this and we're overthinking it.
I think it's also important to keep in mind that your customer journey is static. And so above the line. When you look at the customer journey document, the one that we're going to share, sort of the template, I always color code mine because I like color coding things. But you know, above that line, that portion is static. You know, what the customer's thinking, what's going on in their head, what are those key brand attributes? Those are not changing over time. The only time that they would change is if your sales process changes, or you decide, to Steve's point, that you do need a new buyer stage, then yes, you would see some modifications there. But for the most part, this is going to remain consistent. What is going to change is that below the line. And that's where you're starting to align that key message that you've already identified above. But what is that exactly? How is that being delivered? What's the content? What's the channel? That's going to vary based on what you have in your arsenal at the time. But everything that goes above it, that really doesn't change.
No. Unless there's major changes to the sales process or organizational structure, or how, you know, the product, you know, the service or product that you're offering, that might make an impact above the line. But the best way to approach documenting that is if you're a field researcher, as if you are trying to accurately portray a picture of what that customer's journey is, what they're going through along that path. The last point that I want to bring up on how to create this is really kind of gets in and segues into the last section of this whole podcast is it's really important that this document doesn't just collect dust. Just like personas, this is something that needs to become part of your vernacular and part of the dialogue around the marketing department and as marketing interfaces with other either external vendors or the team. Make sure that you are bringing this document out and using the language that's contained in it as the as your dialogue as you go.
Yeah, and this is one of my my pet peeves is when we create these documents because a lot of time goes into this. You know, if you're doing it correctly, you've got a lot of man hours that have gone into it. You've pulled mm-hmm. people together, you've coordinated schedules, you've gotten in the same room, you've gone over it together, you've thrown around these ideas, and this great stuff is coming out of this teamwork, and it goes into this Excel document, which I'm not gonna lie, it's a little dry, and then it gets forgotten, and we actually had this happen to us where we went through the process of putting it together and then it sat in an electronic file. And that's when we kind of decided we need to take the step and we need to make this visual. We need to make this something that we can look at that's not so overwhelming. And that was a super fun experiment or not experiment, but exercise to go through and kind of putting together that visual journey. But you've gone through the work, why not use it? And so really work on making sure that it is a document that you're using and that you're sharing with your team.
And so how do you use it? In what ways can you put this document to work?
Yes. So I think right off the bat, while you are sitting in that conference room with your sales team, the very first time throwing ideas down on paper, the very first thing that you realize is that you may have some gaps or holes in your content. Right off the bat, you say, I should be talking to my persona, John, about our warranty at this stage, and I have no collateral that talks about that. At no point am I discussing this with him or putting it out to him. It's on my website, but he really has to dig for it. And so right off the bat, you start to see where you have some opportunities to develop some new content or repurpose some new content to make sure that you're meeting those needs.
Yeah, I think you also recognize gaps in your customer experience too. I can think of a couple cases where we've gotten to the point where we start talking about evangelists and we realize, well, wait a minute, we're not doing anything for those customers that want to go and talk about us. We're not making that easy. We're not giving them the message to go out and talk about us because we stop marketing to them once they become a customer. And after that point, we don't want them seeing our ads because we're spending money on, wait, if we send them ads, then they know what to talk about us when they're talking about us to other people who would be interested in buying our products and services. So it makes a lot of sense to do that, but it's not obvious until you start looking at that entire customer journey from end to end.
I think one of the other ways to use this is it really helps to keep sales, marketing, customer service, really any of your customer-facing departments on the same page as to when they need to be working together, because nothing is more detrimental to your brand than inconsistency. And we talked about this when we talked about brand discovery. But you know, you want to make sure that no matter who they're interacting with within your organization, that they are having a consistent experience. And the customer journey helps to make sure that that happens, whether it's collateral that they're getting in the mail, it's a digital ad they're seeing, or it's when they call the 800 number to talk to one of your customer service reps.
Absolutely. And it's not just, it really can be anyone in the company, but it also applies to your vendors as well. So as you're working with external vendors to create content, or even as they become part of that customer journey post-sale, making sure that they understand where what they're creating or their contribution fits into a bigger picture is extremely important. I think this document sets that up well.
You know, we talked about this a little bit ago, and we're going to get into it more next week, but it's an opportunity to align your media and your content. Yeah. So again, we've outlined what the key message should be. We've outlined, how we want to deliver it. Now it's a matter of taking a look and finding those appropriate channels to deliver that content on.
And on that note, I think it's a great time for us to end, because if we start going down that road, we'll end up talking here for the next half an hour, 45 minutes. And really, that's next week's podcast. So please join us next week when we do get into aligning your content and your media channels to your persona and your customer journey and your brand. And until then, onward and upward.
If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on YouTube or your favorite podcast directory. If you want notes and links to resources discussed on the show, sign up to get them emailed to you each week at iterativemarketing.net.
There, you'll also find the Iterative Marketing blog and our community LinkedIn group where you can share ideas and ask questions of your fellow iterative marketers. You can also follow us on Twitter. Our username is @ITER8IVE, or email us at podcast@iterativemarketing.net. The Iterative Marketing Podcast is a production of Brilliant Metrics, a consultancy helping brands and agencies rid the world of marketing waste. Our producer is Heather Ullman, with transcription assistance from Emily Bechtel. Our music is by Seastock Audio Music Production and Sound Design. You can check them out at seastockaudio.com. We'll see you next week. Until then, onward and upward.